Hi, this is Marian Samuel from the Caribbean Radio Lighthouse in Antigua. Every Wednesday at 12:30 p.m., we interview a guest about real-life issues from the Caribbean. Welcome to Lighthouse Conversations, a time to explore the issues surrounding your everyday existence. Your family, your community, your environment, your health and safety habits, your lifestyle, both physically and spiritually, will all be discussed here on Lighthouse Conversations. Let's get started and see just what we can learn to better your life.
Welcome to this episode of Lighthouse Conversations. I'm Nathan Owens, your host. And early each year here in Antigua, we can go down to English Harbor and welcome transatlantic rowers as they complete their journey and step foot back on dry land. I have in the studio with me Mike Hoag. Mike, thanks for joining me for this episode of Lighthouse Conversations.
Honored to be here.
Now, at the time of this interview, you and your team have just completed your transatlantic journey, what, 4 days ago?
Thursday morning at 2:30 a.m. in the morning, yes, sir.
Now, Mike is the pastor of River's Edge Baptist Church in Rio Rancho, New Mexico in the U.S. Mike, can you start out by telling me about your career before you begin pastoring?
Well, to go back further, my parents were missionaries to the Navajos on the Navajo Reservation in Arizona. And so I was raised at church. I actually surrendered to be a pastor when I was 16 years old. Got a little crossways with a preacher and decided, you know, maybe that was mom's call on my life rather than my own. I went to Bible college because it was that or move out and figure out life on my own. But parents were paying for Bible college, so I went. While I was there, I prayed and asked God to show me why I was there, because I was confident I wasn't going to be a pastor. And he gave me my wife, and she got an MRS degree, and I got out of college. I was really interested in getting into being a fireman ever since I was 6 years old, something like that. I saw a house catch on fire, and the fire trucks come and put out the fire. And that's what I need to be when I get older. But that just did not work out, and started out at the City of Blinn Police Department back in 1987. Transferred from there up to San Juan County Sheriff's Department in Aztec, New Mexico, the Four Corners area, in 91, and finished my career there. I retired after 21 years and 10 months of service in law enforcement.
So you were out on the water or rowing from the coast of Africa to Antigua for how many days?
51 days, 17 hours, something like that. Yes, forever in a lifetime, it seemed.
51 days. That is an incredible achievement. Congratulations and well done. And what was the date you started?
December 12th of this last year.
Where did you start?
La Gomera, the Spanish Canary Islands, just the northwest corner of Africa, very close to Tenerife. That's the big island that folks can usually find on a map.
Now, I have to ask you, are you a thrill seeker, or what in the world motivated you to go down this path?
I was invited to attend a training that I had attended before I retired, darling, and I had attended prior to retirement. It's a training designed to help first responders to take their job and smooth out some of the ups and the downs in it, so that they leave their job at work and they when they go home, they're at home, and with an attempt to minimize the impact on the home life that our jobs have, that all first responder jobs have. And so I was asked if I wanted to come back to it, that they were providing it. And so I went, and during that, I found out that a young lady, a friend of mine, who I had supervised and spent time with, she's no longer with us because of the stresses of the job. Mm. And it was really tough on me to hear that. But at that same training, Mark came up to me and he said, "Mike, we're going to row across the Atlantic Ocean, Jared and I are." And I looked at Jared. I didn't know Jared. if you wanted to come to the Sheriff's Department, you interviewed with me. I took care of all the pre-hiring, everything until you were hired, handed out the background investigation. I did all of that work. And so I had met him, but I didn't remember him. I looked at him and he goes, "What are you looking at me for? I think I can do it." I said, I don't know you. So I said, but I know I'm not crazy. So no, thank you. I probably choose not to do that. About a month later, our son-in-law, his sister committed suicide. Mm. And the family had struggles getting the church that they had been going to occasionally to do the funeral. They asked if I would do the funeral at my church. 2 weeks after the funeral for his sister, his dad committed suicide. Mm. And I really struggled with that, but I felt like I should maybe look into this row across the Atlantic. So I contacted Mark. They were going to Florida to pick up the boat. It had been shipped over from the UK when they purchased it. And I said, "Hey, I want to get on the boat. I want to see what it's all about. I can't swim. I can, you know, I scuba dive. But as far as if it was necessary for me to save my life or the life of somebody else, we're going to need a third person." So we got on the boat out in Florida, and I prayed about it and talked to Darlene about it. And I just really felt that was something that God wanted me to do. Mm. And so I told my church and told them, "Hey, this is something that's coming up." And 2 years later, we were getting on a plane to do something that I wasn't on my bucket list.
So the overall awareness that you were doing with your team as you rode across the Atlantic is raising awareness for suicide prevention and mental health for especially first responders.
First responders. So dispatchers, fire, rescue personnel, police, all of those folks that show up first on the scene to deal with those issues.
Now, we will come back to this thrust of the motivation for why you did this rowing, but I want you to take us along on almost 3,000 miles?
Yes.
Of rowing across the Atlantic. I know for sure I will never do that. Maybe I shouldn't say never, but I don't ever plan on doing it. So I want to go along with you. Can you take us along through some of your journey? Now, let's start at the end. As you have been out there for 51 days and a number of hours, and you finally see Antigua, what are some of the thoughts that are going through your head?
My first thought was, no, I still can't swim that far. we had been going for some time at the end. I was on my hour break, and I just happened to look forward, and I'm going, that's land off there in the distance. And so I said, "Hey, I see." I did the sailor way, "Land ho." And Mark going, "What does that mean?" And Jared's going, "No, you can't see it." And so they both had to stand up. And sure enough, we could see land. And we started, we checked the GPS and the nav system. And we're going, "Yeah, it's only about another day away." So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, it would turn out not to be that far away, but yeah, it was just, it wasn't real encouraging to see land yet. It was still a long way. That was in the morning. We didn't actually get close to land until closer to nightfall, and then had to row around from the northern down to the southern part of to English Harbor, all in the dark to see the land and hear the waves crashing against land and still be a long ways away from the finish.
Now, your team was called Team Guardian, and
yes,
there were two other team members?
Yes.
Give me just a quick synopsis of your team.
Mark was our skipper. He is a captain at San Juan County Sheriff's Office. He and I ran a marathon together. We have done quite a few things together. So it wasn't unusual for me to think of, you know, when he came and said, "Hey, we're going to row across the Atlantic." Not a big stretch. He actually had tried to talk me into going and running the Mount Everest Marathon or the Great Wall of China Marathon. And both times I told him, "Yeah, no." So when he approached me with this, that seemed typical. Jared is a lieutenant with the San Juan County Sheriff's Office, and he, like I said, he's where we went to college in Minnesota. He grew up just about 30 miles away from there, and was familiar with all of that area. But otherwise, I really didn't know him very well at all before this role.
But you know him quite well now.
Yeah, yep. Now we are. Yes.
What goes into planning a trip like this? Do you just get together and 3 months later you're involved in it?
This process for Jared and Mark started about 4 years prior to this when they—
4 years.
4 years when they started guarding initiatives to, as you said, to raise awareness for first responder mental health and suicide prevention. And Mark, about 14 years before, had read a book about a guy rowing across the Atlantic Ocean and said, hey, you know, interesting. Well, when they started guarding initiatives, it came back up about rowing across the Atlantic. And so they chose that as their way to draw attention to our cause and a way to draw interest in the challenge that we're looking at and dealing with.
Tell me about the boat that you're on. Approximately, what is its size?
So the boat that we used, and it there's a few different makes and models out there. We Rannick Adventures built ours. It's an R45, designed to carry 4 to 5 people. And so it, if we really desired to be a 4-man team, it just didn't work out with a fourth person being able to hang in there long enough. So we really, for a 3-man team, our boat was a little too heavy.
Okay.
But it worked out. But the boat itself is about 28 foot long, about 5.5 foot wide. But it is specifically designed for ocean rowing. And the R45 model has never, in the length of time since it's been built, has never been rolled over. There's several that have, you know, several designs that do roll over that call it capsized, and unfortunately the R45 never did, and we never had any even close scares like that. So
as you're rowing, how are you oriented?
There's 3 row stations. We just used 2 of them, just being the 3 of it. And so we would row with one right behind the other. And then there's a cabin on either end. The aft cabin, the back cabin, has all of the radio equipment and GPS nav system, all of that in it. It's a very small cabin. That was Mark's. He's the tallest of us, so he necessarily, you know, that was obviously going to be his cabin. And then Jared and I had the 4 cabin, and both of us, none of us, we were never in the cabin at the same time because of our row schedules. So we just rotated through and tried to keep it clean for the next guy coming after you. But
so the cabin is pretty luxurious.
Yeah, it's got a pad on it, and you can hear the waves crashing. Yeah, it's
how is the temperature?
Very warm. In fact, it was so warm during the days, and it's like it got so hot on the outside, you know, the boat. But then you get in the cabin, and it is literally like a sauna without the hot rocks and
wow,
and towels. So yeah, it is really, really warm in there. So we had a row schedule set up to where we could take 4 hours every night during dark hours to go in and try and get some real sleep. So we weren't just waking up in a pool of sweat. And
so you keep mentioning the schedule. Walk me through. I'm here on the journey with you, and you're rowing for how long, and then how much time do you get off?
Okay, so we would row for 2 hours. You get a 1-hour break, and then you row for 2 hours again. So you do that. You have 7 shifts a day, so of 2 hours on, 1 hour off. And at the end of the 7th shift, after you row your 2 hours, you get a 4-hour break. My 4-hour break was from 2 a.m. in the morning till 6 a.m.
And do you normally have 2 people rowing at the same time, or 1, or how does that work?
There are 2 people on the oars at all time during the day. Now, when we went down to the 4-hour shift, when Jared went down, Mark and I would row together for 1 hour. Then I would lay down in Mark's cabin for 1 hour, and Mark had to row solo. Mark would then get off the oars. I would row solo for 2 hours while Mark started his 4 hour break. After I've been on the oars solo for 2 hours, then Jared would come in for 2 hours, and then Mark would come out for solo for an hour, and then we're back to the two on.
So for 51 days, you absolutely never had an opportunity to sleep more than, let's say, 3.5 hours.
3.5 hours went amazing. Yeah, about because it's not just, okay, now here's my 4 hour break and you know, I'm going to go and get in the cabin and go lay down and sleep for 3.5, whatever. When I get off the oars, I have to wipe down. Salt water is very corrosive.
Okay.
And change out of the clothes that I've been rowing in all day, because the next day I have to get up and I have to rinse all those clothes out so that they're ready for the following day. And I need to get something to eat, because if you go to bed hungry, you're going to wake up hungrier and not have any time to eat. It's a process. So you usually wind up with maybe 2.5-3 hours of sleep during that 4 hour break.
Well, I'm tired just listening. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Lighthouse Conversations on the Caribbean Radio Lighthouse. I'm Nathan Owens, your host, and I have in the studio with me Mike Hoag. He is the pastor of River's Edge Baptist Church in Rio Rancho, New Mexico. But he is here in Antigua because he just completed, along with his two team members, rowing across the Atlantic, almost 3,000 miles. Now, I know the Atlantic is big. How big is it?
It is huge, and to consider that it's not just wide and it's also deep, 15,000 feet below you while you're rowing. So you're not going to just step out of the boat and stand up on a rock.
15,000 feet.
So it's that's average depending upon where you're at, but there's a lot of water out there.
Right before I did the station ID, you referenced food and drink. So I want to develop that a little bit. What did you drink? And I don't mean that to be cynical, but you're surrounded by salt water. Obviously, you can't drink the salt water, but there's no way you can take enough fresh water with you. Your boat would be too heavy.
Correct. And, well, we did have to take 40 liters of emergency water.
Okay.
So, yeah, that just weighs your boat down. But we did have a desalinator, which everyone here should be familiar with. We would spend about an hour and a half every day, depending upon how much water we used the day before, refilling our 10 liter jugs, with fresh water. So we could wash our clothes, we could drink water and make our meals and all of that.
What about food? What did you eat and how many calories did you have to consume?
The Atlantic Challenge requires that on average that each rower has 6,000 calories of food for every day that they're for 60-day period. So I say that on average, so it's based on the rower's weight. So I only had to have like 5,200 calories, something like that. I brought more than that because I thought for sure, oh man, I know what I can eat and I'll be working and yeah. I barely ate any of my food. Unfortunately, it was not a good time.
You deal with seasickness at all?
I did. I hate to call it seasickness. I call it more. I was taking tablets, okay. and you have to take them before you eat. And I took them, and I didn't even make it to get my meal, and they were coming back up. Every time I took them, they were irritating my stomach. Okay. So I went away from those, went to a scopolamine patch on behind my ear, and kept that on for as long as it stayed, and never really dealt with the seasickness that I've had before.
Did you have to do any kind of maintenance on the boat during your journey?
So after 2.5 weeks of rowing, I was chosen. I told them, hey, I'll get out and I'll jump in the water. No big deal. So I had to get out of the boat and scrape all the barnacles off the algae and stuff off the side of the boat, so that we could maintain our, speed. It's basically, if you consider a piece of sandpaper on skin or on, you know, it really slows the boat down by having all that on there.
And the only way to do that is to jump into the water.
Yep, there's no way other than get out of the boat, hang onto the side, and use a scraper down the boat as best you can.
And try not to think about the 15,000 feet of water below you?
Yeah. We only have a 70-foot rope. I wasn't going that deep.
What about the weather?
Mark sent a picture of Windy, the app Windy that is used by weather routers and all of that, showing the wind coming from the east, blowing due west, and like going, wow, we could have had some of that during our row. The wind came out of the north or the northeast. Very seldom was it the direction we would like to have had it. And the waves were 20-foot swells and all of that.
The wind then does play a big part in your progress.
Yes. A head wind makes it impossible for our boats to go. A side wind makes it really rough. A partial tail. You don't want a tailwind because there's not enough boat back there to really block you. You just want it to come in at an angle. But the more the waves are going the direction you want to go, the more the wind is going the direction, the better you go.
How did you know where to go? Because if you're busy rowing and you can't really see the horizon and you don't have the stars during the day to be able to navigate by, so how did you know where to go?
There's a navigation system on the boat operated by battery. We have solar panels on the boat to recharge those batteries during the day. Our boat and several boats in the groups in out of the 43 boats that rowed this year, some of them don't have the auto helms on them. So they have to foot steer, so they have to kind of keep an eye on their compass. And so during the day, we had the compass we can see, and so we're trying to point it, basically west or westerly, depending upon which track we were taking at the moment. But the auto helm is so great because we just program in a coordinate, and it tries to get us there as best it can.
Any unexpected things that happened on the journey?
We were hoping to see wildlife, and we did. What we weren't expecting was our AIS. That's the system that tells us whether or not another boat bigger than us is on a collision course or in our area so we can watch out for it and make necessary corrections. It continued to malfunction, which kind of gives you a little bit of concern because we did have some big shipping containers that were on collision course with us and stuff like that. So it was a concern. But Mark was able to take care of those little issues and keep us on track.
So Mark was the captain?
Yes. He pretty much knew that boat inside and out. He just tinkered with it every day since we bought it. And he was that guy. The guy, if he fell overboard, we're doing everything we can to get him back on board because we're not going to. So, but yeah, he was very, very knowledgeable. And every time we had a little bit of an issue, he was able to use what he had already studied and researched to make it work.
Were you able to communicate with other boats?
We talked to a few different carriers. There was a sailboat that went by, and the guy, hey, can I send an email for you? Can I text somebody for you? Let them know you guys are okay, which was very gracious of him. But we have sat phones. We have a BGAN, which gives us internet. The one that scared us was the sailboat at night that was just nobody answered the radio. And it didn't go by real close, but it was, it would have been nice if they'd have said something and, acknowledged our existence.
So you saw them, but they were just...
apparently fell asleep. Who knows? Yeah.
What is it like being out in the middle of the Atlantic? You're the only one awake because your two team members are catching a little bit of sleep. And I'm sure you probably have the stars on a clear night. Relaxing? Concerning?
This coming from somebody, they can't swim. And so you always have that worry of this. They always talk about the rogue wave that'll come out and capsize your boat. And, so you have to stay with your harness and clipped in all the time so you don't get separated from the boat. But I'm out there rowing, and it was so peaceful and so quiet. Other than the sound of the oars hit the water, there really wasn't a whole lot to do other than row and consider the circumstances that we're in. Probably the roughest thing about it isn't when you're by yourself. It's when the other two are up and you get up in the morning, you're facing where you came from as you row, You're going, well, I rode over that ocean and it looks like the same thing I looked at yesterday and the day before that. So you stand up and you look out the bow of the boat going, okay, yeah, that looks like the same ocean I was rode over yesterday. You know, did I move at all last night? But
so not only is there a physical exhaustion standpoint, but you're saying there's also just a mental...
The first 3 days you talked about, you know, from the start, we left La Gomera on December 12th at 12:20 in the afternoon. And it was three and a half days before we could no longer see those islands. So wow. It just, you know, forever you could see those islands. And you're like, we've been rowing. These got to go away soon.
So what is your average speed?
I think our average speed was somewhere around 1.2 mile an hour. Somebody didn't have to really be a brisk walker and they could have walked faster than we rode.
Before we wrap up this episode of Lighthouse Conversations, Mike, you were talking about rowing nearly 3,000 miles across the Atlantic. You were talking about Team Guardian that is raising awareness for mental health for first responders and suicide prevention for first responders. Where can the listener go to learn more information?
Rowing across the ocean was good. It is an amazing feat. But what really I believe is important, what I see as a hero, is those folks that are struggling. They get up in the morning and decide, today I'm going to fight. Today I'm going to push through. Today I'm going to find some way to get past this in my life. Rowing an ocean is no big deal. Getting past those things, that's huge. And those folks that'll fight one more day to seek help. You can go to our website, row3000.com. And on there, you'll be able to find all the information concerning our cause. Also has some contact and information like for first responders who need assistance in locating someone they can talk to. Then there's also the pictures of before, during, and after our experience of rowing across the Atlantic, just promoting the situation that we're trying to draw attention to.
Well, that is all the time we have in this episode of Lighthouse Conversations. Again, I have been speaking with Mike Hoag, who has just completed an incredible journey of rowing across the Atlantic with two of his friends. Mike, thank you very much for joining me for this episode, and I look forward to the next episode where we will continue discussing this journey and you will bring us all the way to Antigua.
Thanks for listening in on our conversation. We trust that it was beneficial to you as you continue to develop a more meaningful life. Do you have a topic or a guest you would like us to have a conversation with for a future episode on Lighthouse Conversations? We would love to hear your suggestions. Send us a mail at Caribbean Radio Lighthouse, P.O. Box 1057, St. John's, Antigua, or lighthousebimi@gmail.com, or give us a call at area code 268-462-1454, or send us a message via WhatsApp or text at area code 268-782-1454. Thanks for listening. Remember, you can hear Lighthouse Conversations Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. on the Caribbean Radio Lighthouse. If you're in Antigua, you can listen at 92.3 MHz FM. If you're in the Caribbean, you can listen at 1160 kHz AM or listen online at www.radiolighthouse.org from anywhere in the world. Or you can subscribe to this podcast. Looking forward to having you join us next time. Bye-bye.